Chapter 5. Easily. Tea is the song of the Gambesinos. You don't know? The song of restless men. Nothing could hold them in one place, not even a woman. You used to meet one of them now and again, in the old days, on the edge of the gold country, away north there beyond the Rio Gila. I've seen it. A prospecting engineer in Mazatlan took me along with him to help look after the wagons. A sailor's a handy chap to have about you anyhow. It's all a desert. Cracks in the earth, that you can't see the bottom of. And mountains, sheer rocks standing up high like walls and church spires, only 100 times bigger. The valleys are full of boulders and black stones. There's not a blade of grass to see, and the sun sets more red over that country than I have seen it anywhere, blood red and angry. It is fine. You do not want to go back there again, she stammered out. He laughed a little. Oh, that's the blamed gold country. It gave me the shivers sometimes, to look at it, and we were a big lot of men together, mind. But these Gambesinos wandered alone. They knew that country, before anybody had ever heard of it. They had a sort of gift for prospecting, and the fever of it was on them too, and they did not seem to want the gold very much. They would find some rich spot, and then turn their backs on it. Pick up perhaps a little enough for a spree, and then be off again, looking for more. They never stopped long where there were houses. They had no wife, no chick, no home, never a chum. You couldn't be friends with a Gambesino. They were too restless here today, and gone, God knows where, tomorrow. They told no one of their finds, and there has never been a Gambesino well off. It was not for the gold they cared. It was the wandering about looking for it in the stony country that got into them, and wouldn't let them rest, so that no woman yet born could hold a Gambesino for more than a week. That's what the song says. It's all about a pretty girl that tried hard to keep hold of a Gambesino lover, so that he should bring her lots of gold. No fear. Off he went, and she never saw him again. What became of her, she breathed out. The song don't tell. Cried a bit, I dare say. They were the fellows. Kiss and go. But it's the looking for a thing, a something. Dot dot, sometimes I think I am a sort of Gambesino myself. No woman can hold you then, she began in a brazen voice, which quavered suddenly before the end. No longer than a week, he joked, playing upon her very heartstrings with the gay, tender note of his laugh. And yet I am fond of them all. Anything for a woman of the right sort. The scrapes they got me into, and the scrapes they got me out of. I love them at first sight. I've fallen in love with you already, Miss Bessie's your name, eh? She backed away a little, and with a trembling laugh. You haven't seen my face yet. He bent forward gallantly. Little pale. It suits some. But you are a fine figure of a girl, Miss Bessie. She was all in a flutter. Nobody had ever said so much to her before. His tone changed. I'm getting middling hungry, though. Had no breakfast today. Couldn't you scare up some bread from that tea for me, or she was gone already? He had been on the point of asking her to let him come inside. No matter. Anywhere would do. Devil of a fix. What would his chum think? I didn't ask you as a beggar, he said, jestingly, taking a piece of bread and butter from the plate she held before him. Asked as a friend. My dad is rich, you know. He starves himself for your sake. And I have starved for his whim, he said, tacking up another piece. All he has in the world is for you, she pleaded. Yes, if I come here to sit on it like a damn toad in a hole. Thank you, and what about the shovel, eh? He always had a queer way of showing his love. I could bring him round in a week, she suggested, timidly. He was too hungry to answer her, and, holding the plate submissively to his hand, she began to whisper up to him in a quick, panting voice. He listened, amazed, eating slower and slower, till at last his jaws stopped altogether. That's his game, is it? He said, in a rising tone of scathing contempt. An ungovernable movement of his arm sent the plate flying out of her fingers. He shot out a violent curse. She shrank from him, putting her hand against the wall. No, he raged. He expects me for his rotten money. ... Who wants his home? Mad not he. Don't you think? He wants his own way. He wanted to turn me into a miserable lawyer's clerk, and now he wants to make of me a blame tame rabbit in a cage. Of me. Of me. His subdued angry laugh frightened her now. The whole world ain't a bit too big for me to spread my elbows in, I can tell you. What's your name, Bessie, let alone a damn parlor in a hutch? Mary. He wants me to marry and settle. And as likely as not he has looked out the girl to dash my soul. And do you know the Judy, may I ask? She shook all over with noiseless dry sobs, but he was fuming and fretting too much to notice her distress. He bit his thumb with rage at the mere idea. A window rattled up. A grinning, information fellow, pronounced old Hagbard dogmatically, in measured tones. And the sound of his voice seemed to Bessie to make the night itself mad to pour insanity and disaster on the earth. Oh, I know what's wrong with the people here, my dear. Why, of course. With this mad chap going about. Don't you have anything to do with him, Bessie? Bessie, I say. They stood as if dumb. The old man fidgeted and mumbled to himself at the window. Suddenly he cried, piercingly, Colin Bessie, I see you. I'll tell Harry. She made a movement, as if to run away, but stopped and raised her hands to her temples. Young Hagbard, shadowy and big, stirred no more than a man of bronze. Over their heads the crazy knight whimpered and scolded in an old man's voice. Send him away, my dear. He's only a vagabond. What you want is a good home of your own. That chap has no home, he's not like Harry. He can't be Harry. Harry is coming tomorrow. Do you hear? One day more, he babbled more excitedly. Never you fear, Harry shall marry you. His voice rose very shrill and mad against the regular deep sowing of the swell coiling heavily about the outer face of the sea wall. He will have to. I shall make him, or if not, he swore a great oath, I'll cut him off with a shilling tomorrow and leave everything to you. I shall. To you. Let him starve. The window rattled down. Harry drew a deep breath and took one step toward Bessie. Oh, it's you, the girl, he said, in a lowered voice. As he had not moved, and she remained half turned away from him, pressing her head in the palms of her hands. Why, word? He continued, with an invisible half-smile on his lips. I have a great mind to stop. ... Her elbows were trembling violently. For a week, he finished without a pause. She clapped her hands to her face. He came up quite close, and took hold of her wrist gently. She felt his breath on her ear. It's a scrape I am in this, and it is you that must see me through. He was trying to uncover her face. She resisted. He let her go then, and stepping back a little, have you got any money, he asked. Must be off now. She nodded quickly her shame-faced head, and he waited, looking away from her, while, trembling all over and bowing her neck, she tried to find the pocket of her dress. Here it is, she whispered. H, go away for God's sake. If I had more I would give it all to forget, to make you forget. He extended his hand. Oh fear, I haven't forgotten a single one of you in the world. Some gave me more than money, but I am a beggar now, and you women always had to get me out of my scrapes. He swaggered up to the parlor window, and in the dim light filtering through the blind, looked at the coin lying in his palm. It was a half sovereign. He slipped it into his pocket. She stood a little on one side, with her head drooping, as if wounded, with her arms hanging passive by her side, as if dead. You can't buy me in, he said, and you can't buy yourself out. He set his hat firmly with a little tap, and next moment she felt herself lifted up in the powerful embrace of his arms. Her feet lost the ground, her head hung back, He showered kisses on her face with a silent and overmastering ardor, as if in haste to get at her very soul. He kissed her pale cheeks, her hard forehead, her heavy eyelids, her faded lips, and the measured blows and sighs of the rising tide accompanied the enfolding power of his arms, the overwhelming might of his caresses. It was as if the sea, breaking down the wall protecting all the homes of the town, had sent a wave over her head. It passed on. She staggered backwards, with her shoulders against the wall, exhausted, as if she had been stranded there after a storm and a shipwreck. She opened her eyes after a while, and listening to the firm, leisurely footsteps going away with their conquest, began to gather her skirts, staring all the time before her. Suddenly she darted through the open gate into the dark and deserted street. "Stop!" she shouted. "On, go!" And listening with an attentive poise of the head, she could not tell whether it was the beat of the swell or his fateful tread that seemed to fall cruelly upon her heart. Presently every sound grew fainter, as though she were slowly turning into stone. A fear of this awful silence came to her worse than the fear of death. She called upon her ebbing strength for the final appeal. "Harry!" Not even the dying echo of a footstep. Nothing. The thundering of the surf, the voice of the restless sea itself, seemed stopped. There was not a sound, no whisper of life, as though she were alone, and lost in that stony country of which she had heard, where madmen go looking for gold and spurn the find. Captain Hagbard, inside his dark house, had kept on the alert. A window ran up, and in the silence of the stony country a voice spoke above her head, high up in the black air the voice of madness, lies and despair the voice of an extinguishable hope. "Is he gone, yet that information fellow? Do you hear him about, my dear?" She burst into tears. "Oh, no, no, I don't hear him anymore," she sobbed. He began to chuckle up there triumphantly. "You frightened him away. Good girl. Now we shall be all right. Don't you be impatient, my dear. One day more." In the other household, Carvel, wallowing regally in his armchair, with a globe lamp burning by his side on the table, yelled for her, in a fiendish voice, "Bessie! Bessie! You Bessie!" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.